This is episode 264. The snare drum is penetrating.
That's right. Right up in there. It's the Tone Control, and today we're talking about a new giveaway. So, you know, get in on that, obviously.
Get given.
Next time, get given away, people. We're talking about some exciting stuff for next time. We're talking about pre-production.
So, most of this episode is just teasing for the...
Anyway. Most of this episode... Listen, it's a bottle episode. This is the one that's going to like carry you through to next time, just filler. Yeah, we're talking about pre-production demos today, though. And I think we had a really good chat about it. Yeah. And I think there's some sound bites in there that probably sounded pretty smart. Thing of the week, you know, Patreon, all that stuff. It's a classic Tone Controller.
All the big hits, playing the hits. Yeah,
everything you need, nothing you don't.
Yeah, all right.
There's nothing you need and everything you don't. Okay.
Yep, that's just hopefully faded it off long ago. And
well, hi.
And it's
the Tone Control.
It's the Tone Control, and we're back.
How are you coming in tonight?
We just
troubleshooted
tonight
a little bit as normal. So
the thing that pisses me off most about troubleshooting this time is after last episode, I wiped out my computer and started from scratch. I was like, it's time. This thing's got like more than 8 years of junk. There's been like two computers backed up and restored into this one. Multiple. So I knock it all the way down, totally fresh, and I spend like basically a whole weekend. Not a whole weekend, but you know, probably like...
Yeah.
It takes like 8 hours. Like I have a lot of shit on this computer.
Yeah.
And just going through and making sure I've done everything, dotted all my T's and crossed all my I's, you know what I mean? And
slow down and do the left-right hand signals for...
and I did it, and it's like the computer feels a little snappier. I think I've cleaned out some crud. There's some of the weird bugs I get are happening a little less frequently, and I'm like, okay, like I think I'm happy with this. I think I'm happy I did that. And then I test this all, like I'm like, what I don't want to have happen is like all my complicated routing for the Tone Control. I don't want to screw that up. So I like took all this painstaking steps to like back everything up and make sure everything is going to restore perfectly. I did it all. I did like test streams for myself, all this stuff. And every single Monday, we record on Monday, every single Monday. And I think Derek's got to the core of it right there is...
I've got a theory about why every 2 weeks we have a problem with this. And the theory is that I bet Discord works in an agile development space and has a 2-week sprint. And I bet that their sprint aligns to our recording schedule. And there's like a time zone differential. Yeah, there's like some
problem,
right? Yeah. And they're pushing updates. Because every time, I'm on Discord all the time, guys.
Yeah.
And then every Monday, it's like, here's 5 updates.
Yeah.
So that's my guess, is that it's just like we're just victims of the timeline here.
Mm-hmm, but
I'm feeling very confident about that theory. I think it's a good guess.
I think that's absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
And so this is why we're changing recording day yet again. We are not.
It's time to get the fuck off of Mondays because of Discord. No, probably not. Although,
we just write them an email asking,
exactly. The reason we moved to Mondays, I think, was mostly because of me and our family over here, because when my wife went back to grad school...
That is why we
switched to Mondays. And it's been chill. Well, she is done. She's had her last class. She's turned in her last assignment. Graduation is Thursday.
So recording Thursday.
So
We used to do Thursdays.
Yeah. I don't mind doing earlier in the week because it gives me more flexibility for when I assemble them and still have them out on time, but that's not really a big deal because it doesn't take me very long anymore. But anyway, we could, this is on-air production meeting. We could be flexible from here because we are, you know, she's going to settle into a
new schedule,
business work schedule, you know, and
that's great.
Likely she's not going to have like, it's not going to be based on that. It's not like these are the evenings when she's always gone kind of thing. It's going to be more like whatever we want. So anyway, we will shift, maybe we won't. But anyway,
I can say with confidence that we're going to shift next time because special edition sibling episode is coming, which we talked about a while back, and we've been trying to plan for like a month.
Tone Control 265, blood is thicker than water.
Yeah. I'm going to like pre-write that down.
Yeah, let's just do that.
265, blood is thicker than... That would be great if that was the name of this episode, though.
Blood is thicker than tempo, actually, is what it's going to be.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it.
Cool.
Nailed it.
So anyway, yeah, my sister is going to be joining us, who's a music teacher in the public school system, and your brother and former bandmate of mine, Tyler, is going to be joining us. And we're going to be talking about, who's a musician, like, of course, former bandmate, obviously.
Thinking back in my mind right now, I can't remember if he replied to my last text yet because he was at work.
Okay.
So
then maybe I cannot say with confidence.
We're trying to make this happen. We're trying to find the right date. The date has been suggested to him. I think it's okay based on our earlier conversations, but not confirmed
yet. Well, in that case,
but anyway,
I'll just play it close to the vest for now and say that next time we record, it's not going to be on a Monday, maybe, most likely. Yeah, so actually, this I didn't think of this ahead of time, but we are bringing, you know, our siblings in to carry the conversation about ClickTrack forward a little bit more because there was a lot of commentary about that, and I had my sister listen to that segment, and she's like, oh, I'm like shouting over my car radio. So she's got things to say, and we're going to do
and
that.
And likewise for Tyler, so...
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yes, and we'll have a quad screen. We'll figure it out. We'll figure out what it looks like to throw all this together on video. I think it's going to be great. Anyway, that's enough teasing that, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. You want to tease the other thing we decided moments before hitting record?
It's time for another giveaway. And I'm going to just say...
Hang on, I'm going to tag the server.
Tag the server. They probably got a tag that the thing started. Yeah, so we're going to do... What are we going to do, Derek? What are we going to give away this time?
We're going to give away two $25 gift cards to Honey Picks. And Honey Picks is making awesome, high-quality picks out of all kinds of different materials, some more conventional than others, lots of designs to choose from, like physical pick-shaped designs to choose from, lots of different grips and textures to choose from. And I've been playing them for, gosh, I don't even know now, a while, like more than a year, and I vastly prefer them over all of my other picks. And so they're... you know, you get into the bougie pick market and you're like, $6 for one guitar pick? What the hell's the matter with you? But then you play it for a while and you're like, oh, okay, you know, $6 isn't so bad.
This one's worth losing inside my acoustic.
Yeah. First, this one's worth sending through the laundry.
Yes.
So, $25, you can get kind of filthy with some picks for $25.
You probably get more
bucks
than one pick.
You probably can. So... what's the criteria to enter, you're probably wondering? It's just to be in Discord and to respond to the message in our giveaway channel.
Yeah.
And that's it. You're going to be entered. So
I will ping you all at the time that I put it up, and then you will have until we draw it, which will be 2 weeks, because we'll do it episode. So this will go up. I will put up the giveaway on that day. And then when the following episode goes up, that will be when we drew it. And because...
Correct.
When do we draw it? Do we draw it on record day? We don't name it in the, I don't know. I can't remember what we did last time. I think last time
we did it on record day. It was like the morning of.
Okay. So it's not quite 2 weeks. You don't have 2 weeks. You have whenever we record. Anyway, whatever. The point is, it's not difficult. You got to go in and like click the little guy with the hair or whatever I decide to put on the giveaway thing.
Click a little emoji. That's it. Like it's very simple. There's no tagging friends. There's no reposting to your story. There's none of that. It's just click the button in Discord so we know you're interested and we'll draw from that pool of people.
Yep.
So yeah, we'll send you a gift card to Honey Picks. If you're not sure what that is, honey-picks.com. You can see all the stuff that they've got going on. Small company made by like a guy or two, and it's awesome. They're great.
Fantastic.
I was playing my 5mm pick from them just this week or just over the weekend.
This has really turned you from the fours, right?
My five is a really different shape. Oh, the other thing with them is you can get them in different sizes.
I'm just trying to make a joke about the granularity of the whole thing. Anyway, I'm sure there is a four. Whatever.
I have one.
Sure.
But I have ones. What do I have? I have like 1 through 5, basically.
Oh, wow. Okay. And, a 1mm. Yeah. Actually, that's probably pretty normal, perfectly reasonable as I think about
it. Right. And so what's cool with them is you can get the same pick shape in different sizes. So they just scale it up. So if you like a Jazz 3, but you want it larger, you can do that. All of their pick size or shapes come in these different sizes and stuff. And I think that's really cool because I'm a small pick boy and I like small picks. So I can do that with any of their shapes. Small pick boy.
Small pick boy. Yeah. Derek's a small pick boy is the takeaway.
And just get in there. And we're going to talk about it in Discord a bunch. So that's where you'll find out information about it. Also get on that newsletter. So,
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Kind of loaded the top of the show with like
We hit a bunch of stuff. I haven't played any sounds or anything. Do we need more? Should we have more catch-up? What's going on in your world, Derek? Let me play something short. I'm going to play the Mayflower at you.
I think that demo is like as old as this podcast.
It was one of the first.
Just about. I would still buy a Mayflower.
It's clearly awesome. You don't need any more notes than that. That's the number of notes that confirms it. Yeah.
Correct. What's going on with me? Lots of things, but also not. My baby is in this weird phase of is in this weird phase of waking up in the middle of the night and just absolutely losing his marbles to the point of like, you know, how do you define an emergency, right? It's when you start to think about like, he must be in some kind of pain or something because it's out of control. And we've dealt with some night terror type stuff. We've kind of dealt with that before a while back. And it's crazy when it happens. It's like honestly pretty scary. It's like you can't get through to them. It's like this weird lizard brain break that's happening. Like they just cannot. They're not asleep. They're not awake. They're in between. And it's odd. So, you know, very conveniently for us, our neighbor next door is a sleep consultant. So we just popped over there and we're like, hey, can we like ask you a question? And we talked to her about it a little bit. And of course, then that night he sleeps through the night.
That's all it took.
He just knew we were talking to the boss, you know?
He was like, shit, they're coming down on me. Yeah. I better get in line.
Yeah. And so we had like 3 nights in a row of getting up between like 2 and 3, probably 2:30 and 3. And he's going absolutely ballistic, thrashing around, like throwing himself around, swinging all over, like not in control, right? So he's gonna like fling around and hit his head on something, which is happening, and who doesn't want to be held, doesn't want to be put down. It's just the whole thing. And then a lot of times, or in the past when we had to deal with this, Beth would nurse him, and he would instantly calm down and fall back asleep in a few minutes and be fine. And we're like, oh my God, like we were working on sleep training and not having to rely on that method. But at some point it's like, you know, so
all bets are off for the night terrors.
And so then we slipped into that a little bit, but then he didn't go back down for 3 straight days. So the day started at 3 in the morning.
Yep.
And so we just were up and I had to go to work, and Beth had to go to work, and it was wild. And so we just had this like 3-night run of, you know, four and a half hours of sleep or so. And then by the weekend, we were like, what is life? What is time? Right? Where is up? Just mm-hmm. completely.
You're back in that zone. Right. It's this is what you're supposed to be over with, right? Like,
oh yeah.
You've done it. You've done that phase already.
Yeah. And so this is one of those phases where as it happens and then you get through it, I look back at this and I cannot help but think, I must look older now.
Yeah.
Like this experience has aged me.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure, like you don't know when they're coming. So it's not like I'm going to take a before and after photo, but like, you know, I catch myself in the mirror after a 3-day run of little sleep and like very high stress and worry. And I'm like, oh my God, I wouldn't talk to me. Like I must look awful. And I when I go out in the world, which isn't too often because I work at home, but I'm like, God, like, what's going on?
You need to check, like, oh shit, I'm going to go to the grocery store. Maybe I should do something about this whole situation.
Right. All this hot mess. So he was better last night and stuff. So like, wish us luck tonight, but it's still kind of all bets are off, but it's fucking brutal. And so, you know, now my beard's too long and it's bothering me. And I need a haircut. And like all these little things are just like, you know, that would help me not look as shitty. But then it's like, you know, my beard's kind of long. So like it takes like a half an hour to do it right and stuff and maybe more. And like, I just,
Derek, you're a quality person. You got to spend the time to taking care of yourself. You do. And really,
to do a proper beard trim at home is a 2-step process. You got to do it and then you got to shower and then you got to do it again.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
I think I don't treat myself with the level of quality that you treat yourself.
Well, because then you get out of the shower and it's all kind of like,
but all the little bits, right? All the bits you missed.
But then you can see where you missed real good. So yeah.
So what I do, I have a slightly different technique. I do it. I do the trim. I take a shower to clean up, and then I move on with my life. And my wife complains that, oh, you missed the. How come you don't do this right?
I hate what I get. In a spot. Like I have this little. Right here, it's too long to see it now, but right here I have this like change in grain direction.
I get, and mine's, I think, I can't tell if my camera is mirroring or what, but I can't tell if we're at the same, this is my
it's
right
on my
side.
Left side?
Okay,
it's
we're opposites. Yeah. Oh, opposites.
Aw, babe. So, when my beard is a certain length, like the hair grows out and then it pushes
against itself and it shoots up
and it looks insane. And so I got to trim this square inch of my beard shorter than the rest. So it
See, I just hope nobody, I just give up.
I notice. That's the thing. I notice first. And I look at I work from home and have like, Zoom calls all day. So I'm just like, I'm just looking at myself in that little camera all the time. That's all. And I see it there. And I'm like, fuck. You know, I'm the size of a postage stamp on my screen, which means I'm full screen on someone else's screen.
Oh, no. Zoom's in me mode.
Anyway, that's what's going on. I'm just kind of like a little little crunchy today. Like I'm feeling a little crackly, you know?
Okay, right on.
I'm feeling aged.
Yeah. Well, I mean, over here, like I said, wife is finishing up, so business is starting. We we moved a bunch of furniture in and assembled some furniture in her office. I've been helping out with that a little bit, so I've got to hang out there a little bit. It's really pretty cool, man. And then on Friday afternoon, she got, so Tyler designed a logo for them. And the website's up. They're getting like client bookings and stuff already, even though they don't open till May 6th. Like it's going. Everything's going really well. She's done a fantastic job, four of them. And anyway, so she gets this thing. She had this logo, like a print made that's like a sign to hang on the wall. It's like a 4-foot by 3-foot rendering of this thing. And
like a canvas print or something?
Yeah. Oh, shoot. Should I save this? I don't have a thing of the week. Maybe I should save it for this. It's not a canvas. Here's the thing. Tease for later in the show. I'm going to come back to this. I'm going to come back and finish this story and talk about the sign.
Stringing me along.
That's hanging in the thing because I don't have anything good for thing of the week and I'm going to call this thing up.
I have something I'm really excited about for thing of the week. So.
Oh, man. The teases.
Look at this. Look at this. We're 20 minutes in. Better stick around for 20 more minutes, baby.
Do you want to get into the random discussion topics that I thought
of? Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Fucking A. What button haven't I pushed? This one. Oh, I've definitely used that recently. Oh, well.
Of course.
All right.
What are we talking about?
So here's what I was thinking. Here's what's come up and I thought might be worth a discussion is pre-production demos.
Yeah.
Right? So this doesn't mean it's a demo because you're trying to show somebody your song, although that's perfectly valid too.
It's part of it.
It's part of it, but this is like a whole thing that people might skip sometimes you can get away with skipping, and I think a lot of people manage to get away with skipping it, but it can be really helpful, and it makes me wonder, like, what all is here? And I don't really know if you've ever been in a process where you've done pre-production demos. So yes. Basically, the conceit here is you're going to make a record. You're a band or an artist. You're going to make a record, but you basically do the whole fucking thing twice. Maybe with less detail the first time and less thoroughness, but you basically record it so that you know your song and you know what it sounds like. And then you record it again, right? So
it's a blueprint. Like it is a template for you to, that's your place to like experiment a little, not like totally, but to try out ideas that are too complex to do with like the number of hands available. Yeah. So you can like be layering things more easily. When we were in Delaney, we did extensive pre-production demoing because we had a lot of like backing track stuff and other like synth parts that were not played by a band member. So
guys in the band who were into that, right? Who had some recording equipment and things. So it was definitely easier than, you didn't have to like rent out a studio just for that. Because that's the other thing is like, depending on how onerous this is, that's what makes people skip.
We did it at Matt's house, like in his basement. He was, you know, trying to step up his recording skills and stuff and engineering skills and stuff, and has come a long way, which is awesome. And so we were like writing songs and then coming up with parts that would play off the laptop that were clock synced, like tempo synced, so we could play along to them live with our in-ears and stuff, all that connection.
Oh, yeah.
So we had like some parts that were like, this is the synth part for the bridge, right? And it was just this standalone thing. Mm-hmm. And so like that could just drop right into our pre-production demo. Like there was a lot of this stuff that was already created that we could not have to worry about as much, which was kind of nice. So we were like, had the pre-production during the writing process. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we had some of that. But then when we were shopping around for where to record the actual, you know, final takes, We looked at a few places, one of which was Kevin's studio in Maine, the Halo. And we went up there and he was showing us around and we were talking about pre-production demos and we were like feeling pretty good about our pre-pro stuff. It was the most extensive I had done to that point. And he was like, yeah, these are cool. And his view of it was like, this is the share the song with your friends level of demo. You're going to do pre-production demos here.
It's like your pre-pro isn't up to my pre-pro standards. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. So he was like, we'll do them again here. And then not like these are bad, but it's like, this doesn't have what I need it to have as the engineer
he's
and producer
kind of
thing.
Specific things that he's looking for and stuff. I would be so interested to have that would be such an interesting conversation because I've not done that many. I've not been in situations where I can do that many. Like I don't have a situation the way he does where, he's taking all these bands start to finish all the way through all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. And I would be so interested to, that's like a bit of expertise that's a little bit sidestepped from where I am, right? And I would love to know, like, what is it that you are looking for in pre-pro demo? But anyway, I wish.
Yeah, I don't know. Cause I was like, what haven't we captured? And I was thinking of it too, I don't know. I was thinking of it like too directly, I guess. I was like, well, we have guitar one, guitar two, drums, bass, vocal. We have all the pieces. It's just that, like, the production of it, it's the process of it that he wanted to or needed to be a part of to like understand
that's
us,
my instinct, you know? Yeah, that like yeah. being there while you're doing it, he's going to infer something. Like, it's even if it correct. Sounded great, it wouldn't be good enough because he wasn't the one, because it's so it, like taking a step back, like this is part of the writing process in a sense, if you're thinking about the record as the finished product.
Yeah.
When you're writing a song, you know, sure, you're sort of thinking of the lyrics and chords and things like that, but you don't, like, if you've ever been, you've been at band practice and your band is jamming and you get the song worked up and it's sounding really great, you actually don't really know what it sounds like yet, right? You have to right. have the somebody put their phone in the middle of the room or do anything like that. That's like the first level of pre-pro demo is record yourself and play it back.
Hear it while you're not playing it.
Right. It's because yeah. because there you'll pick up differences. It's attention. It's because like I'm gonna struggle to hear everybody else's clearly when I'm focused on what I'm doing, for one thing.
Yeah.
And then just I don't know, you discover things, but and then kicking that up to the next like level, right?
Yeah. So like an example of pre-production stuff is like really syncing up the kick drum and bass guitar. I think, like really syncing up the rhythm section of
making
the band.
Making sure those people are connected about what they're doing.
About their parts together yeah. as a unit. Yeah, and so we did a lot of that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like, for guitar anyway, we did a lot of, which specific chord voicing do we want here that's not just the power chord right. version for live? You know, like what extra detail do we want in the sonic signature of this song?
Yeah.
When I joined that band, we were talking about, like, I was coming into songwriting a little bit differently at that stage because I deliberately wanted to shake up how I worked with it. And one of the things that I liked to think about was, like, okay, we're working on a song. What's the thesis statement of this song, right? What is the core idea of what this song is doing?
So if you distill the song, this is the thing that without it, the song is not the song anymore.
Pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there could be a few of those, but it was like as few as possible. What is the fewest amount of things we can put in the thesis statement, so to speak, the mission statement of this song that, yeah, without it wouldn't carry through. And so there was one song, it was like, well, the vibe here is kind of really back in the beat. Like it's really in the pocket. It's really slow and moody and groovy, and we can't let the energy make us want to push the tempo because we know it's so much better with a little slower feel. And that's not the kind of thing you can really focus on while you're playing it and writing it in that moment because you're not,
yeah.
I don't know, you're not thinking about that stuff then. And it, right, especially I writing, mean, like tempo alone changes like crazy. Once you start locking yeah. in a tempo, that's a really big step.
Right. And you know, what's funny about that, about you saying that is like, routinely, I will get to this thing like, you know, what we don't have budget or plans to do pre-production demos on a song, and we'll get to the recording phase and be moving our tempo around by 10 beats per yeah. minute one way or the other in that moment and kind of going, which of these feels good to you guys, you know? And it's those yeah, sorts of things always... that like, yeah, it's not, you know, it's risky to be it making is. It that late in the process.
Right, because if you're making it that late, you're like, do I like this because it's fresh and new and different, this 10 BPM faster thing, yeah. or is it actually good?
Or
and
do that's I really hate hard it to, because I'm yeah. used to the other thing, but it's actually better this new way, right?
Right, and you can't figure out, yeah. I can't figure that out confidently in the moment. So we right. were dialing in tempos down to like 2 BPM, 2 or 3 BPM probably per song, mm-hmm. and just like, well, this one part feels too fast and this one part feels too slow and we kind of split yeah. the difference and the rest of it feels good still. So how do you, so there's all of that decision making and I think
it's
there's
technologically
also like,
a lot easier at that time too because like you have yes. a, you have a tape that, a tape, listen to me. Anyway, you have a-
technologically advanced
technologically speaking, you have this track that you don't, it's not the final thing, so you don't care if it sounds perfect, so you can just warp it, right? And you can just say, yeah. oh, what if we just did this with the tempo, because it doesn't matter. That way,
oh,
you,
we did that.
You
yeah.
know, right, that way you
we, and then, we were adding like whole sections of song yeah. with parts that were not written yet, and it was like, right. okay, so we want to add another 25% to the bridge, we want to go around another two measures or something. But we didn't record it.
Right.
We're just doing that afterwards. So we'd like stretch out the auto drummer and then like pad out some bass. And it's like, okay, this is what it would be. And we'd like take some guitar part from previously and kind of like chop it and loop it up so it would fit a little.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, okay, yeah, I get what the plan here is saying. And then you'd go record the new part that you wrote while editing. You wrote via editing.
Right. And you play it correctly kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that worked out really well. It's very clunky in the process because you're like, oh, the song I'm playing along to just like skipped. Like it's like a CD skipping.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you just do the right thing over it. That's super valuable work, I think. And the whole like you're recording it twice is so like that's not a great argument to me.
So we're right. But the thing is like imagine you have like really limited means. You know, like imagine you're 20, you know what I mean? And like, it's a totally different point in your life, right? And you don't have the, well, I've saved up, I knew I was going to do this. So I've just saved my fun money for a year and now I'm comfortable and fine. I can spend a lot on this recording and really do the, you know what I mean? So there's like a totally different place that you can be where you have this song that your band is playing and you really like it, let's record it. And we'll think of some fun ideas to sprinkle in there or something. So you can really get yourself trapped. And this is like something that's happened somewhat recently is like the band might not be totally clear on it. So all of those things that we're talking about as selling points, like these are things that are selling points of pre-pro because that's the places that it can go wrong. Deciding on a tempo. What if you get all the way through and then 3 days after you're done with drums, you don't love that tempo? Well, if you're asking me, then I can do some things to it, but there's a little compromise, you know what I mean? Like there's the warping I can only go so far with before it starts to really sound weird. And I bet somebody like Kevin would not dream of doing that. I do, but it's within reason.
Like I would warp it for the pre-production demo.
Right, right.
Like that's what that time
right,
is for.
So you don't want to have to do it then. And likewise, you know, having a convert, you know, a recent session I had in the session, bass player's playing away, and the band starts talking about, hold on, that note's wrong. Like, no, don't play. Yeah. I don't like that. Don't play that. And we're having a conversation about what the bass part should be. And it's like, that's another thing that should have been settled before, because what if what you decide doesn't totally, you know, basically at this point, we have to lock into the drums because I probably already got the drums and we don't have another day for that kind of thing in the budget. Yeah. You know what I mean? So now at this point, it's like I'm turning around to them going, well, listen, you've kind of got to go with what the drummer did here. Or if it's a discrepancy of the note, you know, well, unless we're going to turn around and change the guitar part, which you're probably not, you guys didn't, this is a thing, like in rehearsal space where your sound's not that good, you can't hear each other. That's why this is happening, right? You can't hear that note is different from what the songwriter or the guitarist or whatever thought it was. And so you have to have that argument later.
That kind of thing happens all the time. Yeah, yeah. It's a chance to really get in there with, like, get into the song with a magnifying glass and a flashlight, like into certain corners that are like a little sloppy, or like there's it's not just the you need to play this better. It's the one of the, along with this thesis statement idea for Delaney, I was like really focused on what is in service of the song and what is just for me or just cause. Like I wanted more rationale around songwriting decisions. That were
you wanted
not,
to be able to articulate a why instead of just feeling.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that I used to be far too busy a guitarist to keep it interesting and fun for myself and just to like kind of go, oh, you know, I was in my 20s and stuff. And I was like, look what I can do. And that's fun and stuff for sure. But so many times the answer is less is more.
Yeah.
And this is a chance to really look at that stuff again, because you're not playing yet. You're not playing your instrument in that moment. So you can listen to how the other band members are, you know, interacting with your part, interacting with each other's parts, and all of that. So I think, pre-production demos, it can feel like a lot of work that ends up kind of just like vanishing. But you the more you put in to a point, the better it'll be in the end. And I don't know. I think you kind of owe it to yourself to do as much pre-production as you are capable of.
Yeah.
Whether you're, you know, first chance to record something guy in his 20s or been doing this forever.
Yeah. And probably we're not talking to push back about this being a good idea at all. Like I don't think there's probably anybody in the audience who's thinking, well, that's stupid. It's just that whether you actually put the means into to take care of it, is it that important? Because, it's obviously practice at the very least. Even if your pre-production demo, you just hit all the points and go, we love it. We've just practiced recording it. You know, I tell singers all the time, you know, these sort of three levels of, well, I sing a lot by myself or in the car, and then I sing on stage. I've sung on stage with some people, you know, I've recorded. Now I've been in an isolated room with headphones on. You know, those are all like ends up feeling super different. And the same goes for other instruments too.
Yeah.
And so having practiced the recording process and like taking it down, you know, the nitpicky things we do, I can still do at the end, right? Let's tune your guitar to that chord because there's something just slightly out about it and we want it perfect. Yeah. So we're going to do that nonsense of just playing one bar and then retuning, you know?
Yeah.
That's bullshit, right. But we're going to do that, you know, but that's...
I think it's also a chance to look at the song as objectively as possible, like from just a different perspective, right? It's the environment change is so different too. Because I know for me, like if I blow it at a show, it's like, it feels bad and you're like, damn it, you know, I messed up this part and it's kind of embarrassing and you're like, ugh. But before long, you're just like, all right, on to the next one.
Yeah.
There's a new show coming. Like, I'll get it next time. And the same is true for rehearsal at band practice. You're just kind of like, man, I really messed up that one part and let's do it again so I can make sure I got it. That's like super low stakes. When you're in the studio, like everyone's watching. And it's this, there's not only that, everyone's watching in a way that's not at a gig. And everyone's watching like in the future, right? It's this kind of pressure of this is the take. Like this is the one that everyone's going to hear for real.
Well, maybe, but you can do another one, right? So it's like it's high and low pressure at the same time, right? You have the eyeballs.
The timeline, the time gets into it and like the budget and
you
like
could
all
run
that
out
stuff.
Of time.
I don't have all, like you could just keep, you could get in your head about it. You get the yips about music. Like it happens. So anyway, I think I should do it more like in my own life, but it's a really valuable set of skills.
I think this the aspect of it that is like what tone is going to work for the song, guitar tones or bass tones and stuff. If you're going to apply it to drums, I guess I would say drum heads or just the feel of playing, like how hard you're playing in certain parts and stuff, and how that's going to actually translate down the microphone is different from how it feels like to you. Likewise, how you play when you're practicing versus when you're rehearsing, you're imagining the song in your head and it has a certain tone, right? But when you get to the studio, things aren't going to sound exactly right. Maybe some other gear is more appropriate. And how much do we, you know, you planning that tone, hearing it in the record makes sense. So, you know, I had a band who wasn't, and this I think is less so the more experience you have, the more time you've been through the recording process. But, you know, early in people's careers, as far as playing in bands are concerned, it can be hard to imagine what your tone is supposed to sound like. Like if I'm going right back to beginner, you know, sometimes you hear a record that you want to emulate, but that's guitar and bass, and it's also drums, and it's also the emotional impact.
Four guitars,
maybe, but sometimes not too, because that's the other thing. Everybody knows about double tracking, but sometimes it's not, because sometimes the tone is coming because there isn't a wall of sound, and that way I can make each guitar louder. You know, it goes both ways. So
that happens all the time with like how much gain to use on your overdrive sound. Like I'm always over cranking my overdrive sound because I want it to have a big full wall of sound thing for live.
Yeah.
And then when it comes time to track more than one guitar part, it's like, oh,
starts to smear.
Yeah.
I was taught that you basically should do a little less than you think you should do. And then repeat that to yourself every time you go adding another layer of guitars, more or less, right? So if we're going to have six guitars, then I'm going to really gain some of them down because those are going to be the layers that give the clarity or something like that, you know?
Totally.
Although these days, frankly, I've switched around and I usually end up having like a left and a right and then I push those faders, you know? But it depends. It depends.
Well, and also now with all the tech, like you can do all these tone changes later a lot more easily too. You could just reamp anything like directly in your hardware. Yeah. So, like, that's a different conversation.
Adjusting the gain knob after it's recorded is
choice. You could. I think it's worth your time to have as much of that figured out before recording day is here.
Absolutely.
To just like be the most prepared. Set yourself up for success. Like that's all you're doing. Right. And then when you go into the studio and you're like knocking it out, great. Like you did.
Right.
You did it as like I like recording as much as the next guy, but I'm also like. It's not that I want to mess up. I just want to record more. And when I mess up, I get to play more guitar. So it's like fun, great. But then I do like the song in one or two takes and I'm like, well, all right,
now
my part's done, I guess. Now what do I do? Yeah. But I don't know. I think, what was I going to say? You had mentioned something that was like, oh, that makes me think of this great point. Now I lost it. But
knowing your tones ahead of time or?
No, it was... shoot, what was it? I don't know. If it comes to me, I'll just interrupt.
All right. Yeah, I guess that's my major thing now is having gone, you know, you have to go through the process a few times. So pre-production demos
is
good.
I got it. When you had mentioned at rehearsal, you're kind of imagining the song in your head.
Yes.
That's something that you don't realize you're doing. And that's something that you can be really, really tight with your band at rehearsal and at gigs and stuff. And there's still going to be parts that when you record it and listen back, it's going to feel like stuff's missing because you're just not enough people to give it like the full bore production value for live a lot of the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, like that's part of the reason Delaney had a lot of like string backing and a lot of synth stuff and other like just beeps and boops that we added through the music that we could then also bring to live, which was really cool. But I just think I do it all the time where even at rehearsal, like the mix I get in my in-ears, I'm like, this sounds kind of rough today, but it's exactly the same as it was last time because that's how our thing works.
Yeah.
And then as the night goes on, I just like get more and more accustomed to how it's sounding and I can start to like kind of project things that aren't there. I can hear stuff that I want to do or someone should do for this part of the song, even though it's not actually there. Like you have these ideas and you can sort of hear them, but not actually hear them. And yeah, that's the thing. It just gives you a chance to see what's actually part of the song and what's in your head.
Right. Parts wise. And like the thing you're saying about boiling it down to this fundamental forces, that's going to leave you with room to put things in. Whereas if you're trying to throw the kitchen sink at every section of the song, you know, it starts to run out of dynamic. It starts to run out of moves that you can make. Everything is super full. You know, I have so many records I listen to and it's like, there's so much extra sprinkly stuff in here. And I feel like it's so dense. And every time I try to make a record like that, it's so difficult. And I end up having all these sounds at the same time. And the secret probably is that I have them all at the same time, all the time. And those little records that I love, they're just putting it in here and there.
A little, what I mean, less is more.
Introduce that layer, pull the fader down. You know, listen carefully to records that you love and realize how much you're not hearing that guitar all the time. You introed it, and when they got halfway through that first riff, they knew they had the listener. Now I can pull it down and let somebody else take the spotlight for a second. And those kinds of things you don't expect are in the mix, so you don't imagine them. And
So I listened to that latest Sleep Token album again today. Like Loud, Good and Proper. It had been a while since I put it on. And that's one of those albums that is so full of sound. Yeah. It is so rich with stuff that's not instrumentation, right? It's just like pads and synths and all this other, I guess that's instrumentation, but it's all this other non-guitar-based drum stuff.
Right. It's not guitar-based drum. That's, you know, I listened, maybe it was a few days ago, the same thing, but I just noticed even more sections that I just never realized before. It's like, this is like the breakdown of the song or the big chorus of the song, and then realize that the guitar is playing like one note. Yeah. The guitar is going meow,
Yeah, it's way up high or something.
I have the implication that there's this thunderous power chord, right? That band gave me that impression even though they didn't play it, right?
Yeah.
And that
it's all in the bass and drums or something.
Right. And that's not the thing that it takes some experience. Like that feels like an experienced composer, right? And a band that has the self-control to not just go, wah, with everything, with the gain, you know, like we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, have an idea of what they expect things to sound like or their expectations. I mean, they've been doing it for a while, right? Their expectations, no doubt, meet. But if you haven't, you might have these ideas of what your song's going to sound like. And I'm thinking, I keep calling back to, I'm not trying to shame anybody, but like I keep calling back to like recent experiences. And, you know, I got, the band had references that were a surprise to me.
Mm.
And I was like, all right.
Oh, references as in like, we want our album to sound like this.
Check out this guitar tone. Check out the feel of this part. And I found myself going, that's mostly bass.
Yeah.
And it was like, they did not realize that, right? And it's like their standard sound, if you look at what their gear is set up as, their distortion pedal has the, bass mid treble, the bass knob is dimed. The amp, the bass knob is cranked way up. I'm like, okay. So that strikes me, and I don't know, I'm inferring a little bit because I'm not going to like be weird about it, but like that strikes me as you're trying to make your guitar sound like a whole band because that's what you're used to listening to, right? So you haven't been through this process too many times.
Which might work when you're playing by yourself, like work enough that you're feeling comfortable sound.
Right, but it's not the thing. So I try to achieve that. I'm like, okay, all right, well, let's do this thing. That's not what I was expecting you to want the guitar to sound like, but let's do this. Like, let's shape things. Let's achieve that sound. And they didn't like it. And then it's like, I get new references, and these are completely different references. This is completely different. All right, let's go down this road.
And the second batch, were they more in line with what you were expecting in the first place?
Yes, but we still had to have some conversations about like, you know, it's like why. At a certain point, it was like, now that we're basically matching the ideal guitar tone, it was like, why doesn't this hit as hard as my favorite song or something? And, you know, the guitars aren't, I basically kept getting the complaint that the guitars aren't loud enough. I'm like,
turning the guitars up
is the same thing as turning everything else down. That's this other secret thing that if you're not into recording all the time, you don't realize, but that is true. It's a zero sum game mixing realistically. So if I turn the guitars up, if I add more guitar tracks, if I turn the gain up, something else has to go away.
You got
to
make room for it.
Right. And so it was like, the guitars aren't loud enough. Look at how loud the guitars are in this song and how hard it hits. And I listen and go, the guitars are quieter in this example than they are in your mix. So that's not it. That isn't the thing. You think it's the thing, but it's not the thing, right?
It's not to call anyone out. And it's not that it's a trick, right? It's not that you're going, ha ha, you dummy. Like, that's not the point here. It's that like implied listening state.
Balance. You could say like, listen to how loud the guitars are. No, that's not what you love about whatever song you love. What you love about it is that the balance that is achieved there. Everything you love about like any part in some song that really sticks out in your memory and hits you emotionally. It might be lyrical for one thing, but besides that, setting that aside for a second. It's the balance. It's always the balance, because if it was just guitars, it wouldn't hit that way. And if it was just drums, it wouldn't hit that way, except, you know, there's probably examples where they see. But in any of those cases, it's the balance. And that's the thing.
I have a good example.
To step away from whatever your instrument is, like if that's your instrument, then being careful to not make that your only focus, because that's going to make you throw off the balance. So.
This brings an example to mind. I have the song Apprehension by Manchester Orchestra, whose hoodie I'm wearing right now. Shout out Manchester Orchestra, not sponsored.
Send us money. Go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, the song Apprehension starts with a drum beat, and it's like two measures. It's pretty short. But the sound, the kick drum sound specifically, is like it is a shining example of, I think, such a great bass drum sound. It's mm-hmm. punchy, it's in your face, but it's the part is kind of mellow, but it's still got a lot of oomph behind it.
Okay.
And then the rest of the band comes in and the drums have to come down. Yeah. And you can hear it. Like it kind of, I don't think it's a flaw. It's just how it, this is what we're talking about. This is how you do this stuff, is like, it kind of feels like the bottom falls out from underneath.
And it probably does.
Because
that's
it does,
probably the, like, mix move, right? Is to suck a little bit of that low end out to make it still cut through when everything else is in the way.
It's just that it makes me want that drum break. It makes me want them to add a drum break somewhere to hear more of that.
Hear
sound
more of it, bring it back.
Huh. Yeah, because it's like so like thick and so cool sounding, but it's so brief at the beginning. And I'm just like,
wanting
if
more.
You listen, if you focus in and listen to the drums through the rest of the song, it's obviously there. It's just not as like, it's, you're not as focused on it because everything else is playing too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, I don't know. That's a pre-production
decision. All of these little design
decision,
choices.
Probably.
Yes, it is. And it's these little choices that add up to the thing. And you have to go through. So the main thing is, like, no one should be expected to just know all this stuff right away and be able to nail, like, the idea of what their final mix will sound like from the beginning.
Yeah.
It is experience. It's going all the way through the process, whether you're a singer, songwriter, or a full band. You absolutely will not get it right. As right as it can be the first time. And if you do, you're some kind of freak.
So. Yeah.
And we're not worried about you if you do.
No. Well, this is the thing, though. Like, this is about making music in general. That what we're talking about here is like how to get your idea of a song out of your brain and into the ears of other people and stuff. And these are the processes that you have to follow. And this is a far more captivating and interesting conversation to me than anything about, like, which overdrive is better. And I know, like, there's
I thought it would be a good chat for the show, man.
There's, but, like, which overdrive is better?
Yeah.
Is a question that might come up during pre-production when you're doing guitar tones, right? Like, how am I going to build my pedal board for this and stuff? Mm-hmm. That's fine. But just the underlying conversation of, like, this is the best tube screamer on the market. Who gives a shit? And it's because this stuff, like,
does it balance with the rest of the band as it stands now in this song? That's the thing.
Okay, yes. So this reminds me of a post I saw in the guitar subreddit, not Guitar Circle Jerk, just regular guitar, which is just the best of humanity's efforts. The post says, what's your go-to opening to discussion? I have Gibsons and Rickenbackers. I love them all. But the electric guitar I play 90% of the time is a Strat. What's your go-to guitar? And people start, like, commenting in, Tele, pick up, plug it in. It's all I need. Like, all right. You know, like, I'm kind of...
Guitar Kabul amp? Guitar Kabul amp?
Exactly. And so this whole... I just got really frustrated today in Discord because we were talking about some unrelated but other stuff. Kind of in the same thing that, like, everyone's just forgetting that 99% of what this all is, including pre-production and doing stuff in the studio, is just what you want to do, right?
Yeah.
You don't need a reason a lot of the time. It could just be like, this is the vision I have for this project because it's what I want to do. And at no point is someone going to be like, well, you know, Guitar Complete Amp over here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not the time for that. I don't know. I just, it when we talk about this stuff, it just kind of re-emphasizes to me a lot of the conversation in these fields is so misguided. We are not talking about the right things. And it bothers me because we're in it so much. I know I'm like turning this into a complaint about the industry thing again, but it just makes me think of that stuff. Cause then you're in like, when you're doing pre-production, you're working with your people, whether they're band members or songwriter partners or whatever, you're like really in service of the arts at that point. And that's cool. Like that's way more valuable, I think, than getting into armchair expertise around slab fingerboards versus veneer, right?
Yeah.
Or locking tuners or not lock. All this bullshit that is just swirl and drag on the whole system.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get out of your own ass. You know, That's a,
get out
that's
of your own ass.
That's a pretty good point to end on. And just to sort of highlight that out of this whole conversation and say, like, all of that considered, at the end of the day, cool is still better than good in most of the time in music. And I think what you're saying kind of brought some of that back to me, because that's always been like one of my weakest points. Like, I am constantly trying to remind myself and give myself the strength to make the choices that are cool instead of the choices that are good all the time, or the choice that is like perfectly balanced from like a technical perspective. And some of this stuff with, you know, an artist that isn't sure how they want their song to sound, and we end up doing these redos and stuff, it can be frustrating. I'm sure it was frustrating for them too. But ultimately, what we went to and what they're pushing me to with the, like, the guitars aren't loud enough thing, we did achieve something that is, the guitars are a lot louder and harsher than I would put in the mix normally, right? Huh. But I was like, I'm trying to do right by them. I'm trying to make them happy. And I shipped this thing and I was like, now listen, I am trying to walk up to that line where your listeners mm-hmm. don't turn off your song, but I'm worried. I literally said that to them, I think. Yeah. And then I waited like 3 days and they're much happier with it now. And I waited like 3 days and I went back and you know what? It kind of kicks ass, right? Yeah. So we landed somewhere.
We were just
you know?
Talking some time ago when that Teenage Wrist record came out, and we were like, get a load of this snare drum.
This fucking snare drum is
it's
like
in
the
your
whole mix.
Butthole.
The whole mix is there, and the snare drum is like right up through the middle. Tickling your the
your bits.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. It's the undercarriage.
It's,
yeah.
It is. It's it's like
I
the
think
rest
about
of, no,
that
you know
all
what
the
it
time.
Is, Derek? Hold on. The rest of the song is tickling, and the snare drum is penetrating. You know what I'm talking about. So anyway, yes, exactly. Cool is, and that's the thing. I wish that was easier for me, and I am trying all the time
well,
to
it's
do
like
that.
A
so I'm trying to lock that
practice.
Away. As an, this is another experience I have of, I was pushed to do something I wouldn't normally do, and as I look back on it, it's cool. There's a record from years ago that I went back and listened to that I worked on, one of my favorites that I ever worked on. This is from like 2015 or 16 or something like that. And the guy wanted this strange thing with the vocals. He wanted it done a certain way. That's not the way I normally do it. And I did it and it sounds awesome. And he wanted the drums. The kick drum has like no attack, but it's a kind of music where there isn't a lot of cover up. So it would sort of fit and it's cool. And a bunch of things that that are not my go-to
See,
mix
like,
things.
That's what
and
I'm
it
saying.
Came out
that's
great.
That's the thing. Like you're doing the thing right now that I do at a gig when I blow it. I go like, I'll get it next time. Right. And so like there's a little bit of that, like I'm taking a risk here. And then, you know, a few years later, you go back and listen and be like, it fucking paid off. Like, and it you did. Know, you can get it next time still.
And lots of the mixes that I think were like technically close to perfect that I did, like I listened to it and I was like, at the time I was like, this is so perfectly balanced. You know, they're good. But there isn't anything that's going to leap out and grab you. And those things, every time I go back and listen to that record, I think, oh, man, listen to the way that came out. And this thing, I'm going to go back and go, those harsh guitars, but, oh, man, when they kick in, you know, he's right. When they kick in, it really does
now,
hit
do you. Do you think that's at all, I know we're kind of near the end of the show here, but, like, is that at all related to, like, I don't even know how to put this, like to the listener and how listeners have changed and fans of music have changed over the years, that we need something that is very hooky and not musically hooky, but is like a little, you know what I'm saying? That's like the snare drum that is in your face that an average listener might not point out.
I don't think that, in fact, I think I understand your thought here. I don't think that that's a modern thing. Because think about like the gated reverb snare drum, like this accident from the 80s, right? But it was that. That was the poking out of the mix thing that sounded crazy. But that was the thing that gripped people. I think that's enough
good
examples,
point. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, there's always... that's now I'm like, what's the next thing? that you're like in pursuit of that, like, what's the crazy trick I can pull on this song? Not trick, yeah, but like what's the...
I don't think it's tricks because no, you don't... It's not necessarily...
Sorry.
It's not
I'm
the
not
same,
apologizing for that.
Not at all. It's because it's not tricks because it's not the same thing every time. It's not just that thing's too loud, right?
Yeah.
That does it each time. It's something, it's just something that is cool. It's
something that is cool. That's the goal. Yeah. I just listened to the Sleep Token record like a few hours ago. So it's very much in my mind. Yeah. And I was like, God, I am like, these guitars are inside me. Like, you know what I mean? Like they are, this tone, this like thunderous wall of sound is coming from in my brain. It's so focused and it is so intense and stuff. And like, I'm sitting there thinking that thought of like this, I could never achieve this. I don't even know how you start to, not just the songwriting, but like the whole feel. How do you do that? It's pre-production demos, baby. Let's wrap it up.
It is. In the pre-production, find the cool and you can't see it correctly until you can step out of it. So you got to do the demo. That's it.
Got to do the demo.
That's
and
it.
And add that to your thesis statement of the song.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Ooh.
Oh, all right. Quick little number, and then we're gonna get out of here with our usual closing stuff. Thing of the week.
Thing of the week. Okay, so my thing of the week is Dracula Daily. And I may have mentioned this on the show sometime last year. I'm not sure, but Dracula Daily is the novel Dracula by Bram Stoker delivered to your inbox in the form of a newsletter every day because Dracula, right?
Like
Dracula,
bit by bit.
Yeah, pieces of it every day because Dracula is an epistolary novel. It is made up of letters, diaries, telegrams, newspaper clippings, blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
Everything in it has a date associated with it. And they send you the section of the story for that day every day. And so there could be a stretch where there's no updates. There could be...
Oh, okay, that was my next question, right? Yeah.
There could be a stretch where you're getting a paragraph at a time, a couple lines at a time, and then you might get a full bore chapter.
Yeah.
And this starts every year on May 3rd and goes until November 7th, which are the timeline of events from Dracula. And it's free.
That's very cool.
How cool is this idea? Do you remember in the early, early days of Twitter, there was an account
that...
First
entry is May 3rd, it says here on
May
3rd,
yeah. So we're just like 2 weeks away from this starting. Yeah. And so I had signed up for it last year, and it started coming to my inbox, and I was like in the middle of the story. And I've never read Dracula, so I was like, I can't pick up in the middle. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I unsubscribed, but they said, haha, wait, do you want to know when we start next year? And I was like, you bet your ass I do. So it's coming up.
Because this is probably the second most common thing that ever happens here. The most common being people sign up. And then the second most common is people unsign up because it was the wrong day.
Yeah. So I'm hoping to like add Dracula to my books I have read list this year by way of my inbox. And I think that's really cool. And so do you remember in the early Twitter days, there were these accounts that would like recount historical events in real time?
I do not, but I believe wholeheartedly.
Yeah,
I wasn't aware of that. Yeah.
There was a pretty popular one that did all the major events, or not even major, but events of World War II in real time. So through the year, it would be like, this is what happened today. And it wasn't just a historical retelling. It would be like,
it's a newscast almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just little snippets, you know, 140 characters at the time. It was just tweets about like, and maps and stuff like that. It was very cool. So it reminds me of that a little bit, that they're taking something that has already happened and kind of retelling it as though it's happening now, which is cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dracula Daily, just Google that and you can sign up. It's totally free.
That's pretty cool. This is like a little bit of code somebody wrote and away it goes, basically self-sufficient, right?
I have a late ad second thing of the week, if you'll allow it.
He doesn't want to save it for next
time. I don't.
You always got a thing. You've got so many things, Derek. This is the joy of Derek. He's got so many things. He can throw two at you, Justin, and he's not worried. Yeah. Yeah.
Look at this motherfucker.
Well, I've seen this because this came around between probably on Discord or something. But anyway.
Yeah. So this is my Lego Technics solar orbit array. I don't even know what you would call this, like model. It has a little tiny crank on it and it orbits. It's the Earth orbiting the sun and the moon orbiting the Earth. And there's a little mechanical crank that I turn and it spins the Earth and it's on its axis and it spins the moon. And there's like, you see it coming around
here.
There's
a year in it and a day.
There's
and
a year in it. The months are printed along this ring here. And then along this ring here are the phases of the moon. And so you can just like align this thing for kind of wherever you are. And you can make an eclipse.
So do you do that? Do you like... when you come in the morning, do you set it to today?
I turn it one rotation.
You turn it like, yeah.
So like one rotation on the crank is like, it's got to be 5 days on Earth, right? Like it's pretty long. You can get it going real fast.
Ah, it's like with Superman up in here.
But it's so cool. It's so cool. Anyway, that's
rad.
I had to share that with you specifically.
Absolutely excellent.
If no one's making it yet, missed opportunity to hook this up to a small Lego motor and have it orbit in real time.
Get the gearing right for whatever voltage so that it's just like imperceptibly moving all day.
The mechanism that is this thing, the gearboxes and stuff that are in here, is exquisite. Oh my God. It is just tasty design. Oh, the engineering that went into this is so clever, so smart. Brilliant. Anyway.
Have you seen, there's a YouTube channel that I've seen a couple of times that does a lot of like Technics gear stuff and just like testing different materials, like putting a sprocket in and just setting up the gearing so that like a 9-volt battery motor will just absolutely destroy like a metal rod. Like, because the gearing is, it's just, it takes like, you know, 1-to-1 and then he just changes the gearing and loads in a bunch of gears. And now he's like 1-to-10,000 or something. And it's like the first gear is just whizzing and the metal rod just twists like a newspaper.
That's so cool. I've seen the ones where the guy has like a simple car built, a four-wheel vehicle built, and adds different sized wheels and different like motor configurations and stuff for it to get over certain obstacles. And so it shows you like, well, having larger rear wheels gives you this advantage.
Yeah.
And you can see it in just simple mechanics. It's so cool.
The physics of it. Yeah. Outstanding.
Anyway. What's your thing? Tell me about the sign.
Okay, so wife's new practice, it's called A Purposeful Path Counseling. And Tyler made this nice logo. It's kind of got this...
I saw it. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, there's a path. There's some sort of leaf kind of things in it. And then there's this... I can't remember if it's octagonal or hexagonal, but there's a shape and then it's sort of doubled over on itself and... They had all this meaning to it, and I don't know enough to describe it. But anyway, they got this sign made, and apparently this is like an Etsy shop somewhere. It's like laser cutting, and the sign is like a metallic backed acrylic. It looks
metallic
like
backed acrylic. Okay,
it looks like basically a gold mirror.
Oh,
and. All of the sign is cut out of this laser cut out of this like 1/2-inch thick acrylic with a gold backing. So and it looks pristine and it had like a plastic peel on the front. So it's like perfect.
I'm looking on their Instagram. Is there a photo or a video of this thing yet? No, maybe not.
Of whose Instagram?
Purposeful Path Counseling's.
Oh, I wasn't aware they had an Instagram.
Yeah.
She took some pictures.
This is just empty office space. So
yeah, it's just starting to get decorated. Like all the furniture isn't in, but basically it comes with like a cardboard stencil. So I like measured out a center point on the wall and just started like taping up this stencil and sticking on these pieces of acrylic, and it's so cool. It's so much better than like if I was going to hang a sign on a wall that was like on wood or something. It's directly on the wall. And it looks so, it's just so, I don't know, it's naked, you know, it's like there's nothing holding it because every little letter was, I basically hand placed. It almost looks like I freehand, it's like, you know, freehand hung it.
Yeah, okay.
Because they're all separate pieces. They're all free-floating chunks of stuff.
That's very cool.
And it's just the shine of it, and the, it looks like glass from far away, and it's just really, really something. I think it was only like $300 or $400 to have this made. It's like 3 feet by 4 feet. I mean—
it's big.
It's big, and she's like, I don't know, people weren't sure about this. I kind of put my foot
that's
down.
That's bigger than a movie poster. That's probably— this is 30 by 40.
I think so. It's a little— wider and taller than that, a few inches in both dimensions. Yeah. So it was like, Marielle was like, they weren't sure. I really felt like we wanted it. And then we didn't, you never see it until I hung it basically because it was packed in this cardboard and foam and stuff. And I took it all out.
Yeah, get a photo and throw that in Discord.
She definitely has a photo and my phone is right there being my camera. So I can't send it in Discord to you yet. But
that's okay.
I will as soon as we're finished here recording. And anyway, it came out spectacularly. And I thought, like, that is so cool. And like just some Etsy shop that like can cut acrylic like this is. And the thing they sent to us with, it was like 6 cardboard pieces and they're all perfectly cut. So I puzzle them together and then I can place the pieces in the, it's really just the simplest, most elegant form to ship it in. It was great.
Dude, I love solutions where you see that and you're like, this is the idea. This is the way to do this. And like, that's the thing with this Lego set was like the engineering inside that gearbox. Oh, so smart. And I love seeing smart solutions like that in the wild, but
fantastic. Anyway. All right.
Let's get out of here.
Let's get the fuck out of here. So what, I really blew it with our note sheet here, but what are you going to do? It's all the same, isn't it?
Is that what he's called now?
Yeah, hang on. Think so. I think we're going with that, at least to get the question answered. Maybe this will be a poll in the Spotify.
Yeah.
Well, thanks everyone for listening, and you know what to do and all that, including special emphasis this time on joining Discord because we've got another giveaway to Honey Picks. Let's not forget that. Two winners this time. Two winners. The chances are extremely good.
25 buckaroos to go buy some, honestly, killer picks. So, and if you get them, hop in the server and tell us what you got. I want to see them.
Yeah, for sure. And that's all because people support the show on Patreon. Ain't that right? So links in the show notes too. Discord, Patreon, newsletter, which we hardly use. It is the best newsletter you'll ever be on. Yeah, we'll
except
let you know.
Maybe for Dracula Daily.
That's true.
Anyway, get in there for as little as $1 a month and you'll have our undying love. And that stuff helps fund giveaways and all kinds of other great stuff. So the patrons this time are Rabbi Bob, Dave Grohl. It finally happened. Gabe Droll, Carson Ricketts, Matthew Fenslaw, Ryzen Wolf, Brian Gower of the Tone Jerks Podcast, Andrew Walsh of Andrew's Alcove, Sean Wright of Lollygagger Effects, Doug Gann, and is this band name bit working? Yeah.
Sound off in Discord if it is.
Yeah, man. All right.
Thanks, Eric.
See you in a couple weeks.
See ya. Bye now.
Bye.